I'm so, oh, look at us getting better and better each week.
I know. Oh my God.
Who would have thought? Oh my God, ow.
So I think this is our last episode before Christmas, I guess, because it comes out 10 on Saturday, so you'll have like 2 hours on Christmas to listen to the next one, I guess. So if you celebrate Christmas, Merry Christmas. Sorry about this case.
Uh-oh.
I promised you Catherine Knight. I feel like I don't have a whole lot to talk about because basically I just got home a couple hours ago and I called Addie because I was having a mental breakdown. And so I kind of got everything I needed to out, and I took my anxiety medication, which is also my insomnia medication, and so I'm very tired, and like I feel like I have nothing to share. So if you would like to have the floor and talk about things, you very well can do that.
I don't really have anything. Shout out to my mom.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, she texted me today, was like, she had a car drive home, and so she listens to podcasts. And she was like, send me the name of your podcast, and I'll listen to it. And I was like, because I know my dad listens, but, like, my dad, like, also, like, I mean, both my parents know that, like, I curse and stuff. Not that that's, like, a shocking thing. But
no,
like,
that's literally, my dad won't listen to true crime or, like, paranormal things because it just, like, freaks him out. And I'm like, thank God, because I don't think he's ever heard me curse.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that and, like, my mom's also not a very, like, she doesn't like gore and all that, which I was like, I warned her. Like, I told her, I was like, listen, like, just so you know, like, there are cases that we do that are pretty hardcore. And gruesome. If you don't. Yeah. So I was like, just so you know, she's like, no, like, that's okay. Like, I still, like, want to listen to it and, like, hear it. So I sent it to her and she listened to it and she was like, oh my gosh, you guys have such good chemistry and like all of this. And then we were out for lunch and she like pulled up our Patreon. She was like, what is this? And I like explained it to her. And then you texted me. I thought she was just looking at it. Like, that's, I didn't know that she was so subscribing. And she tells me, she goes, I didn't subscribe just because you're my daughter. I subscribe because I actually like it. And
because I believe, like, in it.
yeah, exactly. So shout out to my mom this week for becoming a patron and supporting us.
Yeah, so because we have a new patron, that means this episode is now dedicated to her.
Although yes,
this is probably, I know she's not gonna listen to this one. I'm telling you right now, please don't listen to this because I know you don't like gore, but I just want you to know that we did dedicate an episode to you.
Yeah,
that's a perk of being a patron.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we can do next week's for her.
Okay,
like,
I'm
actually
gonna hold
dedicating
off
it then.
Yes, this but week's a shout out for you, but next week.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing too with the gore is that I always make weird noises and say, "I don't want to say it," and be a whiny bitch about it, and we always give trigger warnings, so it's not difficult to avoid listening to it.
Right.
It's not
right.
Like
it's
we
not
don't
like
give
like
you guys
out here.
Right. We don't give you guys warning or anything, but no, this one's bad. This one, and I think everyone in the true crime world knows this one except for you, Addie. So
yeah, because I'm just like, I don't know, man. I'm not. I'm a poser.
Okay.
I'm a poser.
Well, you're not really a podcast person, I feel like.
Before we started doing this podcast, because once we started doing this podcast, I started listening to other podcasts and like true crime podcasts. Yeah. So I started listening to, oh my God, what's it called? Hold on. I'm going to look it up. Because I wanted to like, I was like, how can someone who like records podcasts not listen to podcasts? Like, that's such a weird thing. The only podcast that I ever listened to was, the Jen and Julian podcast, and now they're not doing that anymore. Oh. So I just go back and like re-listen to like all the episodes I already have. Mm-hmm. But my favorite murder.
Okay.
I started listening to
my my therapist was like, you should listen to them, and I was like, I haven't yet, but I know they're one of her favorites. So
yeah,
she'll be jazzed.
I like them
to hear
a lot. Yeah, I like them a lot. I listened to one of their, they had like a listener stories one, and I was like, as I was listening to it, I was like, oh my God, like, this is, I was like, like listening to all the stories, and I was like, oh my gosh, like these people like have done many a thing, or like crazy things have happened to them. It was right. just like crazy to me. But yeah, and then I have Morbid on my like listening, like I have it saved.
Love
and
them.
Yeah, I'm going to listen to them.
And that's why we drink up on there.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Because okay. we listened to an episode of theirs when we were together too, and I really
yes,
liked them.
Yes, because when we did the alien mm-hmm. abduction in New Hampshire, mm-hmm. Em covered that in one of their episodes, and I was like, you have to listen to Em tell the story, because Em is so funny. I love them. Christine's great too, but I have a special place in my heart for Em, and I don't know why. I think I just relate to Em on so many levels. I was going to go to their show in Boston in mm-hmm. March, but with COVID and everything, I just like wasn't yeah. comfortable. But I would,
yeah.
if Em even knew for a second that I existed, I would die.
Fall on the floor, shitting, pissing, crying, laughing.
Literally. Astral projecting. No, actually, if anyone can get Em Schultz to notice me, I'll marry you. I'll break up with Justin and marry you.
Oh my goodness.
I'm kidding. I won't wow. do that. If I were to break up with Justin and marry anyone, it would be Addie.
Me starting to look into ways that I can't.
Ways I can get Justin and Audrey to break up so I can marry Audrey.
No, I already know that we're all doing this together. I've accepted my role in our three-way relationship.
He just yelled something from the other room, but I have my headphones, so I can't hear him. You heard
I
me
love
talking
you, Justin.
Shit.
Even though he doesn't listen to the podcast, hi, I love you, Justin.
He said he'll listen to it eventually because I yelled at him about it.
When is eventually?
He was like, when I just go eventually? Through phases where like I'll listen to music for 6 months and then I listen to podcasts for like 6 months. And then when I just
That's
get bored of one, I switch
okay.
to the other. I was like, yeah, you have ADHD. That makes sense.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Ugh. Speaking of, sorry.
No,
real
no, no,
quick,
no, no. You're good.
Talking about my mental health real quick. So a couple years ago, I was like going to therapy, like seeing a psychiatrist. And I was diagnosed with like many a mental illness. And one of those mental illnesses was ADD. And I've gotten like a bunch of evaluations done. I mean, they gave me meds for it, which is like they're so I feel like psychiatrists are so easy with like. They'll be like, yeah, take this antidepressant and take this antidepressant and take this anti-anxiety med. But the minute that it comes down to like ADD medication, they're like, let's wait and see. So I actually got prescribed like medication to go on, and I took it for a little while, and I was taking a bunch of other like mm-hmm. medications to like figure it out. And at the time, I was also just like doing a lot of other stuff. So like I wasn't really taking them consistently. And then eventually I stopped taking them. And I took a break from, I didn't take a break from therapy. I just stopped going to the place I was going to.
Right.
And I stopped taking meds for a while. And I actually felt myself like starting to get better. But I think I was also just kind of like growing and maturing. Not saying that mental illness is something that you grow out of. But like I learned coping mechanisms for myself, like healthy coping mechanisms. And so recently over the past couple of months, I started going back to therapy and I started seeing a psychiatrist again. And at first, they were like, so, how do you feel about meds? And I was like, I don't want to do that because I've gotten through the whole, like, trying to find my perfect mix of meds and it did not go well. And every appointment since then, that first appointment, he's been, like, asking me. And at first I was, like, completely opposed to it. I was like, no, I don't want to do this. I don't want to, like, have to go through the whole process because my fear is that they'll put me on one medication and then it won't work out and then it'll just start the cycle all over again of right. trying to find meds.
Right.
And my depression has been like pretty manageable, like for the most part, like it's been okay. It used to be really not okay. My anxiety is the main thing. And I feel like a lot of it stems from my ADD,
right.
like especially my anxiety, because I'm just like constantly overwhelmed with tiny little brain demons. But so I spoke to them this past week, and he like did a little like mini evaluation on me, and he asked me like, well, have you been diagnosed with ADD before? I was like, yeah, like I got meds for it and everything. He was like, okay, so like is that where you would want to start? Because I mentioned to him like a couple of my like I guess, concerns. Mm-hmm. And the first time I mentioned it to him, he was like, well, we'll hold off for right now and see. It seems like you have it under control. And I was like, if under control, you mean stressing myself out and stretching myself thin and overworking myself to the point where I'm a shell of a human being, then yeah.
we have very different opinions on what okay is, what manageable is.
Exactly.
Thank you, sir.
But then I guess, I don't know, he changed his mind or something and said that, like, I could try going back on ADD med. So, like, I don't know what the whole point of this was. I think I just wanted to say, like, in the next couple months, if you notice that I'm more put together, it's because...
Or less put together.
Or less put together.
It's because the meds are either working or they're not.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that's an update on my life.
I like how we were like, I don't have anything to say, and then we went on for 13 minutes.
I went on for 13 minutes talking about a psychiatrist for some reason. I don't know why I said that.
It's okay.
But it's fine.
It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. All right.
Want to get started?
Yeah, it's going to be a long-ass episode, so y'all better buckle up. I mean, I could do this in two parts, but I really don't want to spend more time on this than I need
to. That's understandable.
I have had to take so many breaks researching this, because I'm... Okay, not to be a dick, I'm fairly numb to the case because I know a lot about it and I know how to, like, separate my emotions from the cases that we do a lot of the time. But it's, there are some things that are just so disturbing that when you're reading it over and over throughout different articles and shit, I couldn't.
Yeah. You get a little desensitized to it.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty desensitized, but there was a lot of just uncomfortable things, which is why it took me so long to do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I did want to say everything that I got was from Murderpedia. And then there was one documentary that I watched. It's on YouTube. And it was from Crimes That Shook Australia. And it was a really good episode. And they covered everything really, really well. I was very impressed because I feel like sometimes when I watch documentaries, I'm a little... not wowed by them, but they really did a good job at covering everything. So I tried to get as much accurate information as possible with cases like these where they're really, really widely known. It's very difficult to get accurate information because people say things that aren't true and then that gets spiraled into something else. So I apologize if not everything is completely accurate, but I did do a shit ton of research for this. Or I did research on Murderpedia, and then I did a lot of fact-checking outside of that and the documentary. So, but the documentary was the account of the cops that were on the scene, that worked on the case and stuff, so I know that that stuff's accurate. So I know, like, if there was anything I was confused about, I would always refer back to the documentary. So I really did work my behind off to do this for you guys. And also Addie, because... I feel like sometimes she ruins my life more than I ruin hers. And she does not look happy right now.
No. I mean, the only reason that I was, like, doing that was because I just feel bad about how this week went on my part for the podcast. And I appreciate you doing it.
Had really rough weeks
it's been a month.
It's really hard for it. I think it's because we haven't seen each other in a month.
Honestly, I think that's also the core problem here.
Anyway, all right, let's dive into this bullshit. Feel free to interrupt me and tell me to pause if you need me to, like, take a break. I will not, like, I will understand completely. Also, like, any commentary you have, I will take it as it comes, because I need distractions. So, as I said, I'm going to do the case of Catherine Knight. One more disclaimer. I already said this is absolutely vile and horrible if you already don't know what it is, but also I couldn't find any information on the victim, and I dug and dug and dug and dug, and there was nothing. So I really do apologize that I couldn't find information on the victim, but I tried my best to kind of write my notes in a way that portrayed him the way that he was seen in the community and by his family. So Barbara Rowan and Ken Knight were forced to move to Moree in New South Wales, Australia, because Ken was a coworker of Barbara's husband, Jack Rowan, and they were having an affair.
Gotcha.
So in the town of Aberdeen, where they were living at the time, both the Knight and the Rowan families were well known, and the affair became a major scandal, which is why they moved.
Right.
After the move, two of the Rowan children stayed with Jack, their biological father, and the youngest two were sent to live with their aunt in Sydney. So none of the kids lived with Barbara or Ken.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Catherine Knight was born the younger twin on October 24th, 1955, to Ken and Barbara. In 1959, Jack died. So Barbara's first children's biological father, he died. The two children in his custody were sent to live with the Knight family. Although they were.
So now they did move back in.
Yeah, so now they're back with their mother and Ken. Although there were four other people in the household, Catherine only formed a strong relationship with her twin sister. So she never really had a relationship with her mother, her father, or any of her other siblings. Outside of the house, she had an uncle, Oscar Knight, who was a horseman, and he was pretty much the only other person she had in her life. So she had her sister and uncle, Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Oscar committed suicide in 1969, which absolutely devastated Catherine. And after Oscar's death, the Knight family moved back to Aberdeen, where Barbara and Ken were originally from.
Mm-hmm.
Ken was always a violent and abusive alcoholic. He would rape Barbara up to 10 times a day.
Oh my gosh.
In order to cope, Barbara would tell the kids specific details of the abuse and express her hate of men and sex at
what?
Her children.
And they were young.
They were very young. So Catherine was only 14 when her uncle committed suicide. So
wow.
Yeah, she was young. Catherine was sexually assaulted by many family members until she was 11, but her father never laid a finger on her, which was shocking that he would violently abuse and rape her mother, but never laid a hand on his children.
Mm-hmm.
In school, Catherine was a model student, but experienced bouts of rage over minor inconveniences. Same. Mm-hmm. Actually, not same, because she was known as a school bully. She had assaulted at least one kid at school and was injured when a teacher struck back at her in self-defense.
Wow.
Yeah, so she, like, violently assaulted students and teachers, and she was injured because a teacher hit her back.
Yeah, yeah.
In self-defense.
Right, yeah. So
she's
she had to have
been... She's
a burly
woman.
Right. She had to have been, like, what's it called? Posing a real threat in order for
absolutely.
A teacher to have to, like,
yeah,
hit her back out of self-defense.
And you'll see. I mean, she gets so much worse. At one point, Catherine confided in her mother that her boyfriend at the time wanted her to participate in an act of sex that she didn't want to. And Barbara responded, quote, put up with it and stop complaining.
What the hell?
So we're dealing with, like, great parenting here.
I'm so, like...
I feel bad for childhood her because she was a child. I do not feel bad for the person she became.
Right. No, of course. Of course not, but still, I'm just appalled that her mother would, like, tell her that when
exactly.
She knows,
right.
obviously, from experience.
Right.
And she just, like, I mean, I guess it could also be, like, a trauma response, you know what I mean? Like, she,
yeah, there's a lot of ways
like
that it
she
could
doesn't,
go.
Yeah, like, she doesn't know how to cope with it herself, so she, like, I don't know.
Yeah, there's just a lot to unpack with the family stuff here, and this is just the beginning.
Yeah, I know.
This is like nothing compared to, not saying it isn't awful, but it's really not anything compared to later.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine dropped out of school at 15 years old without ever learning to read or write. A year later, she started her dream job at a slaughterhouse.
Oh.
And she worked by, or sorry, her job was cutting up organs from the meats.
Ugh.
She was quickly promoted to boning and was given her own set of butcher knives, which she promptly hung above her bed everywhere she lived up until she was incarcerated.
What? Okay. How, first of all, she's like, what, a teenager
15,
still at this
16,
point?
16.
Her dream job is a slaughterhouse.
Yep.
And I'm sorry, it's not funny, but, like, the fact that a promotion is going from cutting up organs to boning is, like, it's a little hilarious to me. but
yeah,
I guess that's how, I mean, it's a slaughterhouse, so that's how that works.
I mean, I'm sure there were not many people that wanted to work there.
Yeah.
It's the fact that she got the butcher knives and then hung them above her bed in every single place that she lived up until she was put in prison.
Right.
In 1973, Catherine met heavy drinking coworker David Stanford Kellett. Whenever David got into bar fights, Catherine would literally fight his battles. So she'd jump in, push him aside, and beat the fuck out of everybody. And she did not lose fights. And at this point, the town of Aberdeen knew her as a crazy woman who threatened to fight anyone that made her minorly upset.
What a reputation.
I know. In 1974, David and Catherine got married at her request.
What does that mean, at her request?
Because she wanted to get married.
Oh, weird.
She,
oh my God.
She said, let's get married. So they showed up to the wedding on a motorcycle while David was drunk off his ass. And upon arrival, Catherine's mother told David, quote, you better watch this one or she'll fucking kill you. Stir her up the wrong way or do the wrong thing and you're fucked. Don't ever think of playing up on her. She'll fucking kill you.
Oh, my God.
Her own mother. Catherine had high expectations on their wedding night after hearing that people were having sex 5 or 6 times. Well, David fell asleep after only having sex with her 3 times.
What do you mean, only? Oh my
only
God.
3 times. So she tried to strangle him.
I'm sorry. What? Hello?
On their wedding night.
That's not how we react to things.
Nope. On one occasion, while Catherine was pregnant with their daughter, Melissa, David arrived home later than expected from a darts competition. Catherine's response to that was she burned all of his clothing and shoes, then proceeded to hit him in the back of the head with a frying pan. Okay, this bitch sounds like some Tom and Jerry shit. I'm sorry.
It really does, though.
Yeah. David ran away and collapsed at the neighbor's house, and he was treated at the hospital for a fractured skull.
Oh my God. Yeah, because them shits are heavy.
Yes. Especially, what was this, the 80s? This wasn't like a nonstick fucking ceramic pan. No, this is the 70s. Like, this is probably a fucking cast iron, big bitch pan that she's swinging around.
Yeah.
So somehow, she convinced him to drop the charges.
He probably felt threatened.
Oh, he was definitely
scared of
her.
Probably why. Like,
yeah.
Especially after, on your wedding day, their mother comes up to you and is like,
she'll kill
you.
Just
so you know.
And then literally, hours later, she fucking tries to strangle you.
Tries to strangle him. Yeah. Oh, my God.
So, shortly after the birth of their daughter, Melissa, in May of 1976, David left Catherine to move away with another woman in Queensland, as he should.
Yeah.
Well, the next day, Catherine was seen with Melissa violently shaking the baby carriage from side to side. And she was taken away and admitted to St. Elmo's Hospital, where she was diagnosed with postpartum depression.
That's it?
Yes.
I mean, not that that's, you know... I understand that being a mother is terrible, but that doesn't explain why she tried to kill her husband twice or...
It happened before she was even pregnant. I had postpartum depression. That's why I tried to strangle my husband on our wedding night. Like, no.
Yeah, no. No. Wait, so it was her own baby carriage or it was...
It was her own baby in that baby carriage.
Oh, my God.
She was a newborn. Literally, like, a couple weeks old.
Oh, my God. Jesus Christ.
After a few weeks of treatment, Catherine was released, but almost immediately she put her 2-month-old baby on the train tracks and left her there to get run over by a train.
What? No. No.
I'm sorry I dropped I'm sorry I dropped that on you. So I did not realize that was my next bullet. That's why I read it so fast. I'm sorry, but yeah.
That's okay. It's just like, oh my God.
Then she stole an axe, went into town, and started waving it around, threatening to kill people.
Oh, my God.
A man by the name of Old Ted found Melissa while he was foraging nearby and rescued her minutes before the train arrived.
Oh, my God. Thank God.
Yes.
Thank God that... What was his name again? Old Ted?
Old Ted.
Love him.
Love him, too. Catherine was taken to St. Elmo's again, but ready for this? Ready? She swindled them into releasing her the next day.
I'm sorry, huh? She's waving an axe in town and you're just going to be like, yeah, she's...
I'm sorry, she left her baby on the tracks, first of all.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that she's probably just like very good at manipulation.
She absolutely is.
I feel like in order to, like, I don't know, the way that I think about it is, like, with all the shit that she went through in her childhood, like, that's probably, and it's not like it's a skill, but, like, it's something probably she picked up from, like, her upbringing and just, like.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know, man. Like, when you're crazy, you gotta, like, it, you gotta figure out a way to, like, make your crazy seem okay.
So, basically, yeah, she was like, teehee, I'm gonna twirl my hair and you guys are gonna let me out. And then they did. A few days later, Catherine slashed a woman's face. I read somewhere that this woman was 16 years old.
What? So this girl, this yes. young girl.
But I wasn't sure if that was entirely true. Right. So I didn't write it down, but I'm just saying that it could be. And she demanded that the woman drive her to see David in Queensland. After stopping at a gas station, the woman was able to escape. And by the time the police arrived, Catherine had taken a little boy hostage and was threatening him with a knife.
I'm sorry, my jaw is just, like, dropped right now.
No, it as it should be.
What the hell is, like, oh my god. What the hell is her issue? Like, that's the only thought I have is, like, what the hell is your issue?
Yeah. I wish I could tell you.
I think it's evolved from postpartum depression, just saying. I think we've surpassed that now.
I think maybe that bitch is fucking insane.
Yeah.
So this part's really funny. The police attacked her with brooms.
I'm sorry, what?
To disarm her. And then they were just like, I don't know, what's that thing? Don't you hit like mice with brooms to get them to go away or run away?
Yeah.
That, like, I'm like, what? Yeah.
It's Tom and Jerry.
It literally is.
Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, so the police attacked her with brooms to disarm her, and she was sent to the Morissette Psychiatric Hospital. At the hospital...
So a different hospital yes, now, right? Okay.
As if this is gonna fucking help. At the hospital, Catherine admitted that her plan was to find the mechanic that fixed David's car and kill him, because what? Fixing his car is what allowed David to leave.
I'm sorry. What? How about you were abusive to your husband and that's why he wanted to fucking leave you because you're a piece of shit?
Oh, this part's gonna get you. And then she, then she also said that when she found David and his mother, she would kill them. So,
oh my God.
They notified David about the incident and he and his mother moved back to Aberdeen to support Catherine.
What? Wait, why? Why would they do that after getting a literal death threat?
I don't know if she needed to be, like, released into the care of her...
Some, yeah.
Like, I don't know if next of kin is the correct term for that, but...
like, some sort of relative?
Right. And he was, like, her husband still. So, I don't know if that's why, or if they were like, oh, she's crazy, she can't help it.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Catherine was released on August 9th, 1976, to the care of David and his mother. They moved to Woodridge, and Catherine got a job at Dinmore Meatworks. In March 1980, David and Catherine had their second daughter, Natasha. In 1984, Catherine left David.
Oh. You spent all this time.
Yes.
I'm sorry. You spent all this time trying to get him back and then leave him.
Mm-hmm.
Have a kid and then leave him.
She then moved back in with her parents before renting her own house in Muswellbrook.
Mm-hmm.
She returned to her job at the slaughterhouse, where the first one that she got when she was 16. But she hurt her back a year later and went on a disability pension.
Mm-hmm.
Since she didn't need to rent close to work anymore, she was able to receive government housing in Aberdeen due to her disability.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1986, Catherine met 38-year-old miner David Saunders. And I forgot to mention, Aberdeen is a huge, or at least at the time, was a huge mining community. So, like, most of these people were miners.
Gotcha.
Because it was really good money, and it was, everyone was doing it. It was just easy to find work in that industry.
I'm not going to lie. When you said 38-year-old miner, I was like,
oh, hold on a minute. I'm so sorry.
That's not a minor. No. That's on me.
No, because I don't.
Obviously, this person is not under age if they're 38 years old.
No, but I could have worded it differently. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, after a few months, he moved in with Catherine and her two daughters. So, she was able to keep her two daughters. But he actually kept his apartment in Scone. Catherine became extremely jealous that he kept his old place, concerned with what he was doing when she wasn't around.
Oh my God.
Maybe worry about yourself, bitch.
Honestly.
She constantly kicked him out, but then would follow him to his apartment and beg for him to come back.
Oh my God. Make up your mind.
Seriously. In May 1987, she, I'm sorry for this, cut the throat of his 8-week-old puppy.
No!
Yeah.
Oh my God.
To show him what would happen if he ever cheated on her.
No.
I'm going to give you a second. I'm sorry.
No, my God. There is no worse person in the world than someone who, like, is harmful towards babies and puppies. Like, I mean, anyone who harms anyone is a terrible person, but, like...
Yeah, but people who are completely defenseless or animals that are completely defenseless.
Yeah, like, that's just evil. That's just pure evil. Oh, my God. Fuck this person.
Yeah.
And I hate her.
I hate to say that it gets worse than that, okay. But it does. Fuck, do you still need sucks. A minute?
Yeah, just, like, 2 seconds.
You're good.
Like, I'm just, like, reeling right now.
I'm going to be honest, like, I kind of blocked that part out because I hated it. And part of me was, like, desensitized to it after, like I said, like, I've read it so many times.
Yeah.
So in June 1988, Catherine gave birth to their daughter, Sarah. So I'm sorry. Yeah. So there's a second David. This is, like, a little confusing. So
okay,
she's with the other David now.
Okay.
The guy she left.
She left.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So now with this second partner, David, they had a daughter, Sarah, and having their daughter led David to make a deposit on a house.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine was able to pay the house off in 1989, and she adorned it with animal skins, skulls, horns, rusty animal traps, leather jackets, old boots, machetes, rakes, and pitchforks. She left no space, including the ceilings, uncovered.
Ew.
Yeah. I think there's pictures of the house. It's just fucking vile.
Yeah.
During an argument, she hit David in the face with an iron and stabbed him in the stomach with a knife.
This is not how we react to things. She's just a very violent woman.
Yeah. She has some anger shit. Maybe she needs to go to therapy.
Yeah. Maybe.
I think I read somewhere in, like, there were two sources, but one said, like, he was stabbed in the stomach with a knife, and one said it was scissors.
Oh, no.
So, I know. That's probably something I didn't need to tell you, that there were multiple sources, but I didn't want to get yelled at. So, David moved back to Scone, but he came back to get his things, only to find that Catherine had cut up all of his clothing.
Oh, man.
He went into hiding, and no one would tell Catherine where he went.
Good.
A few months later, he returned to see his daughter, but Catherine told authorities she was scared of him, and she was issued an apprehended violence order against him, which is basically like a restraining order.
Right. That's
the Australian version.
Mean.
Yeah.
That's so mean.
Yep. It just wasn't believable that, like, a woman could be abusive back then, because women were seen as weak and whatever. So that's how she got away with this shit for so long.
Yeah.
In 1990, a former co-worker, John Chillingworth, got Catherine pregnant with her first son, whose name is Eric.
Okay.
And he was born the following year. There were no violent incidents during this 3-year relationship, but Catherine left him for a man named John Price, who she had been having an affair with. So, his nickname was Pricey. That's what people called him. So, kind of just stay true to him. I think I'm going to use his nickname just because, like, I don't know. I feel like it's what he would want. I can't necessarily say that's true, but I feel like it's just more personal to him. Anyway, Catherine met Pricey at a local hotel, and it wasn't long before they were known as a couple around town. Pricey was a local minor, not M-I-N-O-R, but M-I-N-E-R.
Yeah.
And the father of 3 children. He was described as a terrific man who would give you his left arm if you needed it.
Oh, man.
And everybody that met him liked him. There was not a single person that did not like him.
Mm-hmm.
He got divorced in 1988, and his 2-year-old daughter was living with his ex-wife, and so he had the other 2 children.
Right.
He was aware of Catherine's violent behaviors, but he still allowed her to move into his house in 1995.
Oh, geez.
His children liked her a lot, and apart from violent arguments, he said, quote, life was a bunch of roses.
Despite violent arguments.
Yeah, listen.
Everything was great.
Everything's great. Yeah. I mean, that's, like, as a person, I'm no way comparing what I went through to what he went through, but as a person who's been in an abusive relationship, I understand what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. I mean, if you've loved someone, it's hard not to, and you kind of look for the best in that person. You look for the good. It's really hard to see that the bad things are really overpowering the very few good things that you have, but you really hold on to the very few good things that you have.
Right.
So I can kind of like see where he got that. In 1998, Pricey refused to marry Catherine, so she decided to get him fired from the job he worked at for 17 years.
Oh my God.
So he had taken out, oh my God, imagine if I could read. He had taken an out-of-date first aid kit that his company was going to throw away. And Catherine videotaped the kit and sent the video to his boss saying that he stole work property and they fired him.
After 17 years?
Yep.
For that?
Yeah. Which, I on the documentary, that's, they were like, it wasn't even worth $20.
Yeah, that's,
they literally
BS.
Could have taken it out of his fucking paycheck.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't have even noticed. Like, he was making a good amount of money working there.
Yeah.
He kicked her out that same day because he was rip shit, obviously, and she moved back into her own home.
Mm-hmm.
3 months later, Pricey started the relationship again, but wouldn't allow Catherine to move in this time.
Mm-hmm.
The fighting became more frequent and violent, and his friends pretty much cut him off once they got back together, which is really fucking shitty. I also did want to mention that I'm 90% sure that she kept her house. She did. She definitely did. She kept her house while she lived with him, but then threw a bitch fit that her ex-boyfriend kept his apartment while he moved in with her.
Right. Right.
So it's like, maybe make up your mind. So soon enough, Catherine started picking fights with him that escalated to violence, and she even stabbed Pricey in the chest with a knife.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
One night, she stood over Pricey, and he could see in the mirror that she had a knife in her hand. And then she proceeded to call the police and make a false claim that he had assaulted her, and upon arrival, Pricey told them he wants her out of his house. The police told him that they couldn't make her leave because he didn't have any kind of restraining order on her, even though it wasn't his, or even though it wasn't her, right, yeah. Even though it was his house, like, her name wasn't on it.
Right.
She didn't live there. Catherine then took a restraining order out on Pricey, but she still maintained contact with him.
Okay.
This is when shit starts to, like, really hit the fan, I'm just warning you.
Oh my God. Okay, all right.
On February 29th, 2000, Pricey took out an AVO, which is, like, the type of restraining order I was telling you about earlier, on Catherine to keep her away from him.
Right.
That day, he told his friends that if he didn't show up for work the next day, that Catherine had killed him.
Oh, my God.
His friends told him not to go home, but he insisted because he feared she would kill his children if he didn't.
Oh, man.
Around this time, when he was hanging out with his friends, Catherine videotaped her children, making comments that led investigators to later believe that this was some kind of fucked up will.
What?
So she was making, like, a videotaped will of all of her belongings, kind of. But it was, like, mostly of her children, but she was saying things in a way that made them believe that she was, like, videotaping her own will.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense at all?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
That day, around the same time, like, either before or after she filmed this video, she bought black lingerie.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. When Pricey got home, his kids weren't there because Catherine had sent them all away for a sleepover, though Catherine wasn't there herself. So he got home to a completely empty house. His kids weren't there or anything.
I can't imagine the fear that he felt.
I know.
Coming home to an empty house.
Well, then he went to see his, like, hang out with his neighbors for a couple of hours before going home and going to bed around 11 p.m. Shortly he fell asleep, Catherine arrived, let herself in, watched TV, took a shower, and then woke Pricey up to, quote, have sex. And I put that in quotes because I don't think that it was consensual.
Right.
And I think people were saying have sex because she's a woman. And I don't know, just back then it was a thing that people don't think women can rape men.
Right.
I don't think it was consensual.
Right.
And no one ever talks about that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And those are the last moments of his life. And I'm like, you're going to chalk that up to saying they had sex. I don't think that they did. The next morning around 6 a.m., his neighbors were concerned to see Pricey's car still in the driveway because he never missed a day of work. When he didn't show up for work, his boss sent a coworker to go check on him. Both the neighbor and the coworker knocked on his bedroom window, but after seeing blood on the front door, they called the police.
Oh, man.
The police arrived around 8 a.m. and broke down the back door. The first thing they saw was a curtain hanging in the archway. The officer moved the curtain aside to get into the hallway, but he felt a coldness on his arm, and when he looked down, he saw his arm was covered in blood. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. He thought maybe he had injured himself breaking through the door, but then he realized that the curtain was actually John's skin on a meat hook.
Oh my God. Oh my God. No. No. Oh my God. My stomach literally, like, dropped. Like, I feel nauseous now.
No, yeah. It's bad. It's all bad. Are you okay to continue or do you need me to pause?
Yeah, okay. I'm okay.
Obviously, there was blood all over the house because he had been skinned. And on the kitchen table, there were a couple of plates with cooked meals of baked potato, pumpkin, zucchini, cabbage, yellow squash, steak, and gravy. The plates had name tags, and they had been set out for John's two children.
Stop.
Upon search of the house, they found Catherine in bed, overdosed on sleeping pills. The police immediately called an ambulance for Catherine. They then called for backup, and one of the other officers that arrived said the first thing he noticed was the smell of stew. They then discovered that John's head was removed.
Stop.
Blood pattern analysis showed that he was stabbed in the bedroom, and he dragged himself into the hallway and almost made it out the door before dying.
Oh, man.
Also, they said that it was unlikely, actually nearly impossible, that he would have been able to survive even if he did make it out and get help.
Yeah.
Because he was stabbed 37 times.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. And I think we just talked about the amount of fucking force it takes to stab someone.
Yeah.
So the blood pattern had displayed that he'd been stabbed as he was running from his attacker. And the staining got heavier, like on the wall, the staining got heavier and lower the closer they got to the back door, indicating that he had been collapsing until he eventually just succumbed to his injuries.
Wow.
On the carpet, they could see a blood outline of the body from when he was skinned and a pool of blood from the decapitation.
Mm-mm.
The blood pattern then drips from the carpet stain to the stovetop where they found Pricey's head in a warm pot, indicating that she had cooked his head not too long before.
Oh my gosh.
Remember the cooked steaks?
Yeah.
They discovered that the steaks were John's buttocks that had been baked in the oven, and there were 5 steaks in total.
No.
There were 2 on each plate and 1 in the backyard. Now remember, these plates had been out to serve his children.
Right.
One source said that the, I don't want to say like steak or piece of meat, it just feels wrong. The meat in the backyard was for the dog, and another says that Catherine tried to eat it but couldn't, so she just threw it in the backyard. Pretty much everyone at this point, like, it's pretty much a known fact that she did eat.
Right.
Yeah, it's fucked. But I didn't read anywhere that there was a dog, so I don't, or I read somewhere, but it was only in one source, but I figured I'd add it in anyway.
Right.
On top of a photograph of Pricey, Catherine left a handwritten note that read, and mind you, she can't read or write. So I'll read it the way that she wrote it, and then I'll read it the way she meant it. Time got you back, Johathan, for wrapping my doubter. You Beck for Ross, for little John. Now play with little John's dick, John Price.
That makes no sense.
No. What she meant was, time got you back, Jonathan, for raping my daughter. You to Beck, and Beck was Price's daughter, for Ross, for little John. Now play with little John's dick, John Price.
What the hell?
So, here's the thing, though. John had never laid a finger on her children, on his children. He, like, literally would sooner die than do that. So she was just making this shit up.
Yeah.
Actually, my next note says, of course, these allegations were completely false. She's just fucking insane.
Right.
It was also discovered that she had withdrawn $1,000 from Pricey's bank account, but to this day, no one knows where that money went.
Weird.
Now for the autopsy. And I put, this is a thing I was telling you, well, not the podcast, but I was telling Addie, I put, like, a quote. I pretty much just copied and pasted from Murderpedia because I did not want to, I mean, not necessarily paraphrase because I did do that, but I basically just took like a big quote and pasted it into my notes and then kind of erased stuff that wasn't necessary to read. But it wasn't something that I felt that I could accurately explain in my own words. So I am giving credit to Murderpedia.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, real quick. Sorry. I did want to mention this, that the autopsy had shown that Pricey was already dead when he was skinned, thankfully. Gotcha. So he wasn't alive to be skinned.
Right.
All right, is what it says. Quote, a razor-sharp knife had been inserted just under his collarbone from shoulder to shoulder, right under the clavicles. It was a straight, clean cut, anatomically precise. Then the knife was turned and cut down the chest and over the stomach to the pubic hairline, and made into a T with another straight line. Tracing the knife tip around his pubic area and careful not to cut his penis or genitals, the killer cut down the front of John Price's thighs, over the knees, and to his feet. The killer then moved up the body, held his arms up, and cut down the back of each one and across the top of the victim's head. The killer then peeled the victim's skin off, including his head, his hair, his face, and all the way down the length of the body to the feet, exposing the victim's intestines.
Oh, man.
The entire skin was in one piece, including hair, face, ears, nose, mouth, genitals, and complete stab holes, dripping in blood. Hanging from the S-hook in the doorway, the feet were dragging on the ground. The killer then removed the victim's head clean at the C3-C4 junction, right at the top of the shoulders, using a very sharp knife. The cut was precise and clean. According to forensic pathologist Dr. Timothy Lyons, who performed the autopsy, the whole procedure would have taken about 40 minutes.
And this was because she worked in a butcher shop, no? Like, would that have been a reason like why they were so precise?
Yes, that's exactly why. That's exactly. Because by all accounts, also, like, I forgot to put this in, she was really, really good at her job, which is not something you would want to hear in a case like this.
Right.
They'd be like, oh, yeah, she's great at her job. And people would be like, oh, what do you do for work? Oh, I work at a slaughterhouse.
Right.
You don't want to fucking hear that. So, yeah, that's why she was able to be so precise with it. It's just so fucking evil. Beyond.
Like, that is, like, the essence of just sadistic and just evil is the only word that I can come up with. Like, to basically, like, look at this person that you just murdered and, like, think of them as, like, a slab of meat, and to just completely disrespect their body like that, like, it's just repulsive.
Right. I mean, and she was fully planning on feeding
his
children.
Right. So wait, where were his children after
this? They were at the sleepover.
They were still there. Okay.
Yeah,
because
this was the same night.
Gotcha. Okay.
The next morning.
The next morning, right. It was early in the morning. I was afraid that, like, maybe they had walked in and seen any of it, and I was hoping that wasn't the case.
No.
Okay, good.
Absolutely not.
I mean, not good because it's so, anyway.
No, but it's good that they didn't see.
Right,
I think I pointed this out to you, but it's just freaky that all of this happened very close to the day that I was born.
Yeah.
Because I'm March 3rd, and he died on March 1st, which is the day before my mother went into labor.
Right.
Anyway, so that's it for all the really gruesome stuff, but that's that on that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get back into the, I guess, like, the court stuff. Because as much as I hate talking about the trials and, like, whatnot, because I don't give a shit about their feelings, it's pretty funny. So once Catherine was finally well enough to be interviewed, she denied knowing what happened that night.
Okay.
She was like, I have amnesia. I don't know what happened. No. But they literally couldn't interview her until she wasn't, like, incapacitated from basically overdosing.
Right, right.
So they had to wait, like, 5 days.
Wow. That's a long time.
Yeah.
She must have taken a lot of sleeping pills.
She probably took, like, a whole bottle.
Oh, my God.
On March 6th, she was charged with John's murder at the psychiatric wing at the Maitland District Hospital. Catherine initially pleaded guilty to manslaughter. Do you know, like, the difference between manslaughter and the degrees of murder?
No,
so
I don't.
So, murder is, like, intention to kill.
Right.
Manslaughter is accidental, so, like, a car accident.
Wait, how?
So, she's like, oh, it was manslaughter.
Absolutely not.
Well, her plea was rejected.
Yeah, of course.
On October 18th, 2001, she pled guilty to murdering John, and I couldn't find if, like, I could not find if it was first, second, or third degree. I could not find a single thing that said that. So it just said that she pled guilty to his murder. And that was after, like, a day of trial, I think, and a bunch of the jurors had to, like, excuse themselves during the trial.
Yeah.
And so she pled guilty, and then basically it was just, like, the sentencing. And what she did during the sentencing was any time a picture would come up, she would play this manic, crazed woman. Just, like, why would you show me this picture of my husband, like, screaming, crying, like, losing her fucking shit. Basically, she was doing it to, like, see if she could get away with, like, an insanity plea.
Yeah.
So she, like I said, pled guilty to John's murder, even though she claims not remembering any of it. And so three psychologists were appointed by the court to determine if, one, she was even sane enough to understand the plea deal, and two, to see if amnesia was at all possible.
Right.
And basically to see if these outbursts during the sentencing were even real.
Right.
All three psychologists said that she was completely aware of what she was doing at the time of the murder, and they also diagnosed her with borderline personality disorder, which does not qualify as for an insanity plea, because for an insanity plea, you need to not know that what you're doing is wrong or just not know what you're doing at all.
Right.
On November 8th, 2001, Justice Barry O'Keefe sentenced Catherine to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole and marked her papers, quote, never to be released.
Mm-hmm.
She was the first woman in Australian history to have been given this sentence.
Wow. Wow.
Yes.
And this is in the 90s?
This is in 2000.
This is in 2000?
Well, she committed the crime in 2000 and in 2001, November 8th, 2001, is when she was
That's sentenced. Insane.
Yes. This is so good. In June 2006, Catherine appealed the sentence, saying it was too harsh for what she was being held for.
I'm sorry. No, absolutely not.
Absolutely
not. No, 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 no.
Obviously, it was dismissed, and they said, quote, this was an appalling crime almost beyond contemplation in a civilized society.
Right.
And that is the fucked up story of Catherine Knight.
Is she still alive, or did she die?
Unfortunately, yes.
Oh, ew.
Like I said, you know how I feel about the death penalty, but I also wouldn't be opposed if someone, you know, killed her in prison.
Yeah, I have a feeling they probably had to, like, move her around a bunch and, like, keep her separated.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because she's a very big target on her back.
Yeah.
After that.
Like, I forget where she was. She's working, something for the governor. Like, as, like, a cleaning person for the governor right now. And they were like, oh, but she's, like, great in the kitchen. But then they were like, do you not remember what she can do with a knife? Please don't put her in the kitchen.
Yeah, no.
And they, like, literally will not allow her to have a kitchen job.
Yeah, that
makes
sense.
It's like Lizzie Halliday with the fucking scissors.
Literally. Literally.
They're like, oh, we learned from that. We learned from that. Let's not do that again.
Let's not give someone who has a history of murder tendencies and murder and awful things to have a knife. Also, like, given her history, like, besides just, like, the awful thing that she did to her husband, to Pricey, she was a butcher. So, like, why? No.
Right. That's,
like,
why they were like,
what she's doing with a knife. So, no.
They were like, we don't usually say this, but women don't belong in the kitchen.
awful.
Guys, I can say it as a joke. I don't actually mean it. Please don't come for me.
She's a woman. She can say it.
The thing that, like, gets me is, obviously, murder is fucking horrible. But she stabbed her partner 37 times and then proceeded to skin him, which took about 40 minutes, according to the autopsy, and then hung his skin up in the hallway, and then also decapitated him, and then
right
made a whole ass fucking meal
with him and had plans to serve it to his children.
She had so much time to think about, I mean, I'm sure she thought and knew very well what she was doing, but
yeah, that's not something that you come up with. Like,
she had so much time to stop.
Right, right. The fact that she bought lingerie beforehand, the fact that she, like, did this whole weird video recording of her will.
1000% premeditated.
It was just too, yeah, like, and she had the audacity to try to say that it was manslaughter. Like, nothing about that at all
is an accident.
No.
And I don't know how someone who is as smart as she leads everybody to believe can have amnesia for long enough, probably upwards of 4 hours. I mean, the pot was still warm. That's, and it's like, you had a long fucking time.
Wow. Well, thanks for tuning in with us. Sorry.
You should not be the one apologizing. I am sorry. No, I'm not.
You did give a warning that we were going to be doing this.
I did. I gave you a warning 2 weeks ago. So
yeah.
Really, really quick, I did want to mention, I'm making a new logo. Yeah, that's it. I'm just making a new one.
I'm excited.
I'm also excited. I found one of those, like, the logo that it is now, I made on, like, one of those apps that's, like, Logo Maker. And so I just, it's not original. It's not for me, and so I decided that, also because Addie's doing it, and I wanted to make this more true to us rather than just true to me like it was when I started it. So I'm actually, like, drawing and creating my own, which has been a task in itself, but I'm excited for you guys to see it.
I'm excited to see it. You're doing such a great job. Every time you give me updates, I'm like, this is so good. Nothing has ever been better in my life.
Literally, anytime I show you anything that I do, you say that.
Yeah, because you're talented and I love it. I love everything that you do.
I love everything that you do.
Thanks. I'm not doing much.
You're being my friend, which is more than I could ask for. All right. Do you want to do the thing at the... I'm just going to keep letting you do that because I don't enjoy doing it.
I get so excited.
Yeah, I'll just let that be your thing, all right?
Okay. You do it. Okay. So you can find us on our socials. Instagram is Your Worst Nightmare TCP. Our Twitter is at Nightmare TCP. And if you want to subscribe to our Patreon and contribute in a way that is financial and help us out in that way, you can find us on patreon.com/YourWorstNightmareTCP. You can become a Mothman baddie.
Oh, yeah, you can. Also, you'll get an episode dedicated to you, so...
Yeah, and who doesn't want that? Exactly. You could also email us listener stories. We would love to hear if you've experienced anything. We also just want to hear from you. And so you can find us, yourworstnightmaretcp@gmail.com. I almost forgot that for a second. Oh, my gosh, who am I? But yeah, we would love to hear from you. We love just talking to people who listen and hearing what you think. And if you have any ideas for us, we're more than happy to take them. I know that we are trying to find some more, like, paranormal things to talk about. So if you have any stories or just suggestions for cases, we would love to hear that. But yeah, thank you so much for listening, and we appreciate every single one of you. Also, if you would like to contribute or, like, show your enjoyment of the podcast, you can rate us on Apple Podcasts and leave a review as well. That would really, really help. We really, really appreciate that. Oh my God. That.
Wait, real quick. I would just like to thank the people that after we posted our latest episode and I was basically, or not the latest episode, but the episode where I was like bitching and crying that we had shitty reviews on Apple. So many people went and gave us 5-star reviews and then I cried and some of them were Addie's friends and then that made me cry more. So I just love you if you did that. And I just love you guys for listening and I appreciate it. So thank you. Yes, that's it. Yes. I'm done.
Thank you so much. We will catch you next week. And I think I'm doing the case next week. So
yes.
It'll be fun. We're going to talk about the 27 Club, which I love talking about. So
you're the one who introduced me to that.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be, you know, good Christmas.
Be jazzy. Episode.
Yep.
Oh, that was a pun that I did not mean to make.
Jazzy?
Yeah.
Well, it's rock and roll, actually,
I mean, it's music related.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean, it was a great joke.
No, it's fine. It was an accident. It was totally an accident that I said that. I'm way overtired.
You need some rest.
I really do. I have to work in the morning, and I have to drive
early
because it's going to be a snowstorm.
Anyway, thank you for listening. Have a great week. Right. We will catch you next week.
Yes. All right. Bye.
Bye.